Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 232 of CJ Evolution. Patrick here, host and creator of this great and growing show, growing because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for tuning in. Maybe you're on a commute to work or from work. Maybe you're in the gym throwing around some weights, whatever you were doing. Maybe you're on a hike. I love to hike. Thank you for tuning in. I know your time is valuable. Thank you for spending a little bit of your time with me. Special thanks to Four Sigmatic. If you've never heard of this company, you got to check it out. They make some great products, including their mushroom coffee. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to their great site. You're going to see all their wonderful products. You'll get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. You know, folks, we all hit roadblocks in our life, stumbling blocks, myself included. Personally and professionally, we face challenges. That's where my friends at Frame of Mind Coaching can help out. There's a free assessment that you can take on the CJ Evolution website. If you like what you see, head over to frameofmindcoaching.com and see what Kim Ades and her amazing team can do for you. You know, folks, I love having guests on the show, and all of them come on the show with the various trials and tribulations they've been through, failures, but they got up and they moved forward. My next guest, you're going to love this guy. He was a senior official in ICE, which is the Immigration Customs Enforcement, until he was forced out. He was a whistleblower during the Obama administration, and he was coming forward telling the public and telling members of the government what was really going on our borders. And I know some of you are thinking, well, it's all bad stuff. No, a lot of it is good, and ICE is very much needed. So I hope you enjoy this great interview. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my next guest on the show. His name is Jason Piccolo, and he is a former ICE agent. He's done a lot of things in his illustrious career, including being a military member of this great country and great armed services. Jason, you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me, Patrick.
Well, thank you for coming on. I know you're pretty busy. First of all, thank you for your service. I know you're a military guy like me. And I gave a little bit of a bio of you, but you want to fill in some gaps?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you the past 25. How does that sound
real quick? That's great.
Actually, September will be 25 years. I started in the U.S. Army in the 1990s. I was active duty, artillery, and then I went on to the National Guard and became an intelligence person.
Yeah,
if you want to call military intelligence, that's like that oxymoron. But yeah. No, it was great. I eventually commissioned. I went to college in Minnesota and commissioned as an infantry officer out of the ROTC program. And I joined the Border Patrol in January of 2000. I was stationed in San Diego, right there on the border of San Diego and Tijuana. Very wow. Busy at the time.
Yeah.
About 2.5 years later, I went on to become a U.S. Customs Special Agent. I was assigned to a high-intensity drug trafficking area in that same location. So you can imagine smuggling and immigration was pretty hot back then. Mm-hmm. Now, because I was an officer, I was involuntarily recalled back in 2005 to the tour in Iraq. Was assigned to the Combined Joint Special Operations Task Force as their anti-terrorism force protection officer. Mm-hmm. I also, while I was training up for the war, I was happened to be stationed in Camp Shelby, Mississippi, just in time for Hurricane Katrina. So
oh, wow.
It's kind of an interesting wow. time. After I got back from the war, I worked some jobs in D.C., working with the Department of Defense, working the Guantanamo Bay prosecutions. Mm-hmm. Eventually made my way back to my hometown area of Philadelphia, where I picked up a job with ICE. I was an ICE officer. Then I became an ICE Fugitive Operations Supervisor. Then I went on to work with ICE at their headquarters yeah. as a staff officer. So that's basically me in a nutshell for the past 25.
And an impressive career. Thank you for your service, by the way.
Thank you.
We talked a little bit off the air. I was in the Army. I was down at Fort Bragg with the 82nd for about 4 years. And thank you for your service, sir.
Same for you, too.
And you're a doctor. I know we talked a little bit off the air. So you went to school and got your PhD, I'm assuming, correct?
It's a doctor in strategic security.
Nice.
And then my master's in forensic science.
Nice. Now, what made you want to join the military and eventually get into law enforcement, federal law enforcement. But what made you want to join the military? Did you come from a military background or law enforcement?
No, not at all. I think I'm the first one I can actually recall in my family that's ever been in the military. I've always wanted to be a soldier. I wanted to be a soldier since I was a little kid playing army in the woods. And essentially, you know, right out of high school, I was kind of running around a little bit, wasn't doing too good in college.
Yeah.
And said, you know what? I think it's about time I just followed my dream. I joined the army.
Yeah.
And then I would have went active duty, but just the time, the Border Patrol offered me a job at the same time. And I was like, you know what? I think I'll do that.
Yeah. The military is a great option for people. I mean, I tell my son's going to be 18, and, you know, he doesn't want to go to school right away, which I saved everybody a lot of money. But I tell him, go in the military. I think you can do 2-year enlistments now. Right?
Oh, I'm sure you can. And you know what the thing is about the college one? You can't beat it.
Oh, you can't.
I mean, they knocked out my bachelor's and my master's off the college fund.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, but thank you for what you're doing. And I know you're still working in the federal government. But what are your thoughts about this whole ICE movement? You've heard the abolish ICE movement that's going on in the country right now. What the media is painting a picture. And I know you know this, but I want the listener to know it too, and I'm sure most of them do, that ICE is just going after children instead of going after the real, you know, the terrorists and the drug dealers and all this other.
No, and you know, the thing about ICE is the politicians and everything really have it framed wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, for the listeners, I'll kind of explain how the whole border works, because I don't think people realize that the families getting separated right now are getting separated because they came through the poorest areas of the border. Mm-hmm. They didn't come to a designated port of entry. They didn't go to a consulate office. They were trying to surreptitiously come into the country. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens is if you have a legitimate asylum claim or a legitimate refugee claim, then you would present yourself to a designated immigration officer, which is basically just going up to the port of entry and saying, hey, you know what? I want to have an asylum claim. But the problem with that is it's not easy. Takes a long time, and a lot of times they won't be able to get an appointment with an immigration officer. So what they'll do is they'll come through the border. Now, in 2015, I worked for what they call the human smuggling cell. And our job was to, you know, look at all these unaccompanied children coming in, look at all these smuggling corridors, and everybody coming in through that porous areas that were getting smuggled or trafficked. Now, what we found was a lot of people coming across, a lot of these kids, if they came across with adults, they weren't their real parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were getting trafficked. So when it comes to ICE separating the families, they're not really – what they're trying to do is they're trying to verify if that's really their family. And the other thing is you can't detain people, family units, together in certain – you know, there's just not enough locations that do that and not know if they're verified parents.
Yeah.
But let's say a family comes up to the border. A Border Patrol agent arrests them. They're then given over to ICE to process them. Now, ICE will then release that family unit or those children to the Health and Human Services, who then releases them to a contractor facility, who then releases them to a sponsor. Hmm. So there's a lot of different hands in this, and ICE is just one of those hands.
And it takes time.
And it takes a lot of time. And what we were finding out before is before they started using DNA – is you just couldn't really verify who the family was, if they were really a family member or not. Because we're talking tender age kids here. A lot of them were like, you know, anywhere from a baby on up till 10 years old. Mm-hmm. Does that kind of make sense? Or it's very convoluted process. Immigration is crazy.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, you were in it for so long, but you just simplified it for me and hopefully the listener. But it's amazing how some politicians take this and they spin it. And it's amazing how a lot of people out there just lap it up and say, yeah, ICE, we need to get rid of it because they're just separating families. It makes perfect sense to me. I mean,
other thing is like the U.S. United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, is actually the one that has the biggest hand in anything to do with approving asylum claims or approving refugee status. And nobody ever calls for the abolishment of USCIS.
Yeah.
Maybe it sounds too long to say. Abolish ICE sounds like, hey, let's just get rid of them.
Yeah, and my obvious question is, okay, say in some fairy world or fairy tale world, you get rid of ICE, who do you replace it with?
Well, that's the thing, though. It's like, you know, I was there when DHS was created. I came in pre-9/11, so all ICE was a merger of Immigration and Naturalization Services, Special Agents, Criminal Investigators, and also with U.S. Customs Special Agents, Criminal Investigators, et cetera, and merged the two organizations together. the same jobs that they had for the past, you know, two decades before 9/11. It's just a change. It's a different branding.
Yeah.
It's like back in the day, if you had a Datsun and all of a sudden it turned into Nissan, it's the same type of thing. You know? That's really going to, if you have any young listeners, that's, you know, just look up Datsun. But the other thing too is like ICE has two main components. And this is one big thing for the listeners to understand is that ICE, Enforcement and Removal Operations, they enforce immigration laws, like orders of removal, people present without admission or parole, etc. They're the ones that, you know, run out, do fugitive operations for people who are ordered to remove criminals, etc. Then you also have Homeland Security Investigations, which is about the same amount of manpower. I think altogether like 40,000. I can't remember how many people are in there. Homeland Security, HSI, what they do is they go after narco traffickers, sex traffickers, smuggling organizations. They also do your arms export control type investigations, tons of money laundering, child pornography, anything you can imagine. Anything with an international nexus, I tell people. Mm-hmm. So anything coming or going that we could tack on to a international nexus, I mean, has a connection to somewhere outside of the country, they do it. Mm-hmm. That's why their narcotics apprehensions are way above DEA, because DEA does domestic narcotics. Yeah. So it's such a big organization to say abolishing it just makes no sense.
Well, and how big is it total? I mean, what's the manpower of ICE?
I don't know. I was just going to look that up.
It's probably, I mean, I imagine it's thousands.
It's huge.
I imagine it's thousands and thousands.
Tens of thousands.
So you know, people out there who live in this dream world, okay, you get rid of ICE, and then you're putting thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people out of work.
Yeah, it just wouldn't work. And plus, you know, a lot of the people they're going to try to put out of work are, you know, veterans. They're race.
Exactly. They got families. And, yeah.
Yes, I know.
And we were talking a little bit off the air, Jason, before you came on, and I was reading some polls. I think I read one from Politico. 54% of the population out there think the government should keep ICE. I even saw a poll in the Huffington Post, and we all know leans kind of to the left. They say abolishing ICE is not very popular.
No, it's not. I think even me, I'm semi-conservative. I'm like right in the middle there.
Yeah.
And my viewpoint is everybody I know wants immigration reform. Everybody. The immigration system has been broken since inception. Mm-hmm. And the biggest problem is that it's so convoluted. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants safe borders. You can't have an open border. Yeah. So, I mean, it just makes no sense.
Well, I mean, especially in this day and age. Now, what people are thinking, some people might be thinking out there is, well, we're a nation of immigrants and, you know, the country was founded. I get that. But now in the 21st century where we have terrorism and we have all these people that want to do harm to us, why wouldn't we have people, brave men and women like yourself, on the border protecting us?
Well, that's one thing about the border, too, is you don't have just – a lot of people believe, oh, it's just, you know, we're just trying to get rid of Latinos. It's not.
No.
You have everything and anything coming through that border. A lot of people from special interest area countries, you know, anything with a tie to terrorism. Mm-hmm. Now, think about this, and people don't realize, like, they always say extreme vetting. But if you've never been encountered by law enforcement or intelligence, how would we know if you're a bad guy? Mm-hmm. So let's say you're coming through that Southwest corridor smuggling route. We arrest you at the border and you just give us a claim that, hey, you know what? I just wanted to come here for a better life. But little we know you were training in some terrorist camp in Dubai somewhere. Mm-hmm. You got a fraudulent passport to get over to South America. You ditched that passport. You took the smuggling route up to the Southwest border. You came in and you claimed refugee asylum status. How would we know if we've never encountered you, never processed your DNA, never took your fingerprints, nothing? So, I mean, you just can't tell.
Yeah, and it just amazes me. My wife and I love going to Mexico. If I illegally went into Mexico, from what I'm reading, I'd be put in prison.
You would.
But it doesn't seem to be that way in our country, which is always baffling to me. Let's talk a little bit about sanctuary cities. Why are they so dangerous, Jason?
Well, this is another thing. I used to be a fugitive operations supervisor, meaning I had a team of 13 people. Mm-hmm. I would send out, you know, pairs to go out and look for bad guys. But a lot of times it's really dangerous to go up to someone's house and knock on the door. I mean, you've been in law enforcement. Anybody you know in law enforcement hates that knock on the door.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a sanctuary city, that means they're not sharing information with law enforcement. So if a policeman apprehends someone from that's here illegally, someone who they suspect's here illegally, they don't have to call ICE. They won't share that information with ICE. So let's say they picked up a guy for assault and they're going to release him. It used to be where ICE would lodge a detainer. That detainer is good for 48-hour hold, meaning they could hold – the police legally has to hold that person for 48 hours to give ICE time to get there. Now, they apprehend that person. He's in a jail, a state local jail. He's in a safe environment. Now, ICE could go to that safe environment and pick him up and transfer him into their custody. So what happens with the sanctuary city is they're just cutting these people loose, and ICE has to go find them again.
Mm-hmm. It makes it more dangerous for the agents.
It's huge, yeah. I mean, you know the deal. If you go to one safe environment to the next safe environment, it's perfect.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about, you know, dangers to your officers.
Yeah. Now, why can't the federal government, Jason, compel or sanction the cities that aren't complying?
They can by limiting funding, but that's not a popular
– No, that's not a popular thing.
Not a popular route. But, you'd have to have that. You'd have to have, like, the complete public support. And the government's trying to sue for it, but it's not popular, and it's just draining manpower and it's draining resources by doing that.
Well, and it's putting law enforcement officers who already work a very dangerous job in a very dangerous environment, they're just even more. You're just throwing it on.
Yeah. Well, the problem with the other thing, too, is like I used to work with police all the time. They love having it someone they can call from ICE and saying, hey, you know what? I got this guy, he's a gangbanger down the street. We don't have anything on him. Can you come take a look at him, see if he's here illegally, see if he can remove that problem? Because if a nice person goes up there and sees, you know, they have visible gang tattoos, they look like a public safety, they could go and just interview them, determine if they're here illegally, and then they get him removed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just...
Now, what are your... I never knew... You said something earlier, and I never knew, but it makes sense now that I think about it. I never knew that ICE was so involved in money laundering.
Oh, they are. ICE money laundering, the dark web, it's huge, especially bulk cash smuggling going back south. Just tons of money laundering. Yeah. I mean... Well, and nobody does crime because it's good. They do it for the money, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
95% of crime.
And you never hear about this in the media, just like you never hear you touch on human smuggling. Human smuggling, I know, because I'm in law enforcement, and everybody out there listening in law enforcement, we know it's huge, but we don't report it as much as we should.
No. And the DHS has a DHS Blue campaign, which is labor trafficking and trafficking, where they're trying to build awareness. But if you go into their Twitter feed, you know, they have like – maybe 50 retweets here and there. But a lot of people don't realize, like, human trafficking isn't just sex trafficking.
Oh, no.
I believe it's 20% is sex trafficking. The rest is labor trafficking, like 80%. And that's where a lot of these unaccompanied alien children were coming. They were getting smuggled over here and trafficked over here to go work in, you know, labor camps.
I mean, it's...
And that brings up the other thing that, you know, when I was there, in ICE, it was mostly during the last administration, and they stopped doing worksite enforcement. They stopped doing I-9 checks, which means, you know, we're going to go there and verify all your people are legitimately working. And it's not just for, you know, it's to make sure it's to hold that company accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not, you know, fleecing the immigrants, the legitimate immigrants that are here.
So what happened?
Now,
oh, go ahead, sir.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, now we're actually doing worksite enforcement all the time.
Yeah. Well, you should.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it just seems like a logical thing. A lot of this stuff is just common sense, if you ask me. I mean, it just blows me away. I understand there's a political component to this, and, you know, people try to get reelected and they want to be popular. I get that. But, you know, we're talking about the safety of people who are here, immigrants, and the safety of law enforcement, right? And the citizens, and, you know, the people who are here.
Yeah, and I always used to say we should have a certain amount of people that can come here and be get visas, et cetera. We have that in place. Up the numbers, you know, fix this system.
Yeah,
it's very frustrating for anybody that works in immigration.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, now in 2015, you blew the whistle on the previous administration on a lot of these things that we're talking about. What happened to you after you started talking about that?
Well, that's the thing, though, is I worked for this human smuggling cell. I was the only one from enforcement removal operations that actually worked there.
Mm-hmm.
We had about 20 people working in the cell. And like I said before, the charter was to stop these smuggling organizations from bringing unaccompanied alien children across. Because at the time, there was 80 to 90,000 kids per year coming across. Now, in 2015, I came across a spreadsheet was sent to me. That spreadsheet had 29,000 sponsors on it. And what happened was ICE got together with Health and Human Services, and they ran the sponsors for criminal history. Now, the sponsors, 3,400 plus, came back to having some sort of criminal offense, up to and including sex offenses. So I said, hey, so we released all these kids to criminals. We're not going to do anything. Jeez. And they wouldn't. The optics were so bad for the agency to say, hey, we just released thousands of kids to criminals. Mm-hmm. Now, that night, you know, after there was inaction from everybody I yelled, screamed my lungs out to, I got a hold of the Office of Special Counsel. Mm-hmm. And then I was debriefed on a Thursday, anonymously supposedly, with Health and Human Services to try to explain what they were doing wrong. And that next business day, I came back to work and my detail was terminated.
Jeez. Retribution.
And I told Health and Human Services I was a certified fraud examiner and I worked for the human smuggling cell.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, too trusting, and it's really not that hard to figure out who I was.
Yeah.
But yeah, then I got a hold of Senator Grassley's office.
Yeah.
Chuck Grassley.
Chuck Grassley, yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome when it comes to whistleblowers. And I worked with him for months, and I eventually sued the agency for terminating my detail.
Yeah.
Because they pretty much killed my career in Homeland Security.
And yeah, and it took a toll on your family, I imagine.
Oh, whistleblowing's the hardest.
Yeah, it's the litigation, and like you said, having a target on your back. But you're brave, yeah, man. You're glad somebody did it. Somebody needed to do it.
You know what? I'm still in litigation to this day. Yeah. And you know what? I'm not even suing for money anymore. I'm suing for my the leave I lost, my sick leave, my admin leave, and I lost my availability pay for a year. So I'm not even suing for, you know, cash. No whistleblower I know ever sued for money. They sued to get their self-respect back and to fix the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope that it works out for you.
And I guess, you know, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Just having conversations like this helps. Yeah. But, you know, I've really, whistleblowing is not an easy thing to do.
But you reinvented yourself now.
I did.
You reinvented yourself mid-career. And what are you doing now? I know you're working on the federal level, but what else are you doing? You got your doctorate.
I did. I'm teaching college.
Nice.
A couple different colleges. I'm teaching Homeland Security, teaching computer forensics, all sorts of stuff. I love it.
Yeah.
I've been talking. I mean, I've been on Fox a bunch of times.
I saw you on Fox News. And
all over NRA TV. A really good group I'm working with right now is called OpsLens. They're on CRTV. They're really great. Drew Burquist and Sheena Hutchison.
Yeah.
They're a really good group. I love it. I love writing. I'm just trying to take a positive. I mean, trying to take a negative and make a positive out of it.
Well, that's
all
you can
my
do.
Experience.
That's all you can do, buddy. And it's having that right mindset. And it sounds like you have a great mindset and, you know, have that positive attitude.
Things keep moving forward, regardless of what happens. You know what? They're going to come after me. I'm going to do what I can. You know what? You'll never see me disparage the agency. You'll see me disparage the people, the holdovers that came after me. But that's about it. Yeah.
And I know you give back. You're a big veteran. Obviously, you're a veteran yourself, but you give back to veterans, and you're a huge proponent of veterans, as am I.
Yeah, I'll give a big plug out to Hire Heroes USA. Mm-hmm. I've been volunteering with them about a year and a half. And what that is, Hire Heroes, Brian Stan, big UFC guy, veteran himself, really pushed out the message of what Hire Heroes was. I caught it. He was on a podcast. I said, hey, you know what? Hire Heroes sounds good.
Yeah.
What Hire Heroes USA does is they hook up veterans with people like me, people who have been in the government, people who are in the corporate world, people who know how to get hired. My claim to fame lately has been human resources. I'm a hiring manager. I know all sorts about the federal hiring process. Mm-hmm. So anytime they get a vet that wants to get into federal law enforcement, they'll hit me up. They say, Jason, can you mentor this guy? Can you help out this guy or girl? I'll look at their resumes. I'll help them get a job. I love helping. I mean, if anybody listening out there wants to help out, check out Hire Heroes USA. It's just a great organization.
Yeah, and it's so great what you're doing, because I just think in years past, it seems like we're doing more for our veterans now than we have before. At least that's the perception I'm getting. So many people like you out there, you know, other people like we mentioned, Eli Crane, who was on the show from Bottle Breacher, and all these veterans that are doing wonderful things, and they're hiring veterans. And it just seems to me like I think we're doing more than we have in a couple of years.
Eli's company, I don't know if he started, but I'm pretty sure he started a new movement called Long Live the Veteran Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And that's trying to bring veterans together to help each other.
Yeah.
You know, and it's great.
Amazing. It's just amazing. You know? Well, Jason Piccolo, sir, it is a pleasure and honor having you on the show. If there's anything we can do, please reach out to me. You have my contact information. Much success to you. If people want to reach out to you, Jason, what's the easiest way they can?
Sure, I'm on Twitter a lot. Dr. Dr. Jason Piccolo, Dr. Jason Piccolo, at, you know. And then my website is docpiccolo, docpiccolo .com. Mm-hmm.
And you got a book in your future, Jason. I can see you writing a book.
Might.
I see you writing a book, dude. I'm serious.
I think I'm going to go the fraud route and write a whistleblowing book.
Hey, whatever. All right, man. Well, you take care, Jason. Thank you for being on the show, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.